This episode is sponsored by Gummy Cube. That's G-U-M-M-I-C-U-B-E, gummycube.com. And if you think that web data and mobile data are the same, well, they're not. You can get all the mobile data you need from Gummy Cube to help you optimize your app for better results. So use accurate mobile data. Just go to gummycube, G-U-M-M-I-C-U-B-E.com. Start using mobile data. Don't use Google search data. It's not going to help you out for your app. So that's Gummy Cube, and thank you very much for sponsoring this show. This episode is sponsored by the Apppreneurs Summit. Go to www.apppreneursummit.com, register for free, and then you'll get access to the live event. It's happening from the 9th of April through to the 18th of April. And you'll get me alongside all these other wonderful speakers talking about the foundations of a profitable app business, how to capitalize on social media like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, and proven ways to make money from apps and game monetization strategies. So why not learn from the experts in a live event online? Go to www.apppreneursummit.com. Thanks to Apppreneurs Summit for sponsoring this show. To get a professional preview video for your Apple app, then I recommend going to appvideomachine.com. These guys are experts. They can guarantee that it will be approved by Apple and that your preview video will meet all the criteria and guidelines that Apple set. They're quite strict, as you know, and you can actually endanger the whole app and get it rejected because of creating your own app preview videos. So go and get some more downloads by getting a professional job done. And you wouldn't believe these prices are $79 to get a simple preview video and $147 starting point to get a professional video. So that's appvideomachine.com, and thanks very much for supporting the show.
Hey guys, this is Bram. I'm the creator of StartupStash.com, and you're listening to the App Guy Podcast.
The App Guy Podcast. Straight from your host, Paul, the App Guy. Sharing his app entrepreneur journey with you for your enjoyment. And now, Paul, the App Guy.
Welcome to another episode of the App Guy Podcast. I'm your host. It's Paul Kemp. I try to find some of the best startup founders, co-founders from around the world and interview them for your benefit. So if you're interested in apps or the startup space, or if you're kind of bored at work and you're wanting to know what this life is in startups, then this is the episode and the podcast series for you. Today, I've got a really interesting guest lined up for us. He's going to tell us how we're going to benefit from the work he's doing on his app and also curating news. Let me introduce our guest. It's Sol Weinreich, and he is the founder or co-founder of Minr. That's MINR.com if you want to go and check them out. MINR.me. There you go, Minr.me. And I guess you know when you have a big sellout, you'll probably get the .com, yeah. So well, welcome to the App Guy Podcast. Anyway,
yeah, we're actually going to stick with the .me because that's strategic. It's part of our branding. What we're doing is we want to bring data mining to the masses. So we all know that, or in a sense, it's not. Well, we want to do a lot more than that, but part of our goal is to use algorithms, artificial intelligence, advanced machine learning to bring you the content from the internet that's relevant to you. Now, the reason why we do that is because there are over 92,000 articles published every day, which leads to just a tremendous amount of content. It's just too much for any human being to consume. I don't care who you are, obviously. It doesn't matter if you're Albert Einstein or if you're, you know, the guy down the road. Nobody can read that much. And so that leads us to this point where, and I see it in my generation, I'm pretty young, relatively young, only 29 years old, and, you know, especially with my younger siblings, et cetera, they all have cell phones, they all have smartphones, they're all online all the time, but they just don't have an interest in finding the relevant news because there's just too much of it. It's just too much noise. So our focus at Minr is to deal with this and to keep people engaged in what's going on around them, in their community, in politically, in their world, you know, whether even if it's not necessarily, you know, down the block, but in the country, you know, today there was a lot of news recently, you know, with Bibi Netanyahu from Israel making, you know, comments in Congress about Iran. You know, I think that has global repercussions. But if you don't read the news or you don't follow the news, you don't know about that.
This is actually a really important subject to me personally as well, because I do consume a lot of news, and I've found that the mainstream media, they can't be trusted anymore in a way, because they're always pumping down fear, uncertainty and doubt, you know, and an agenda. There's always agendas behind the news. So it's good that I can go to somewhere like Miner and ask Miner to almost curate the news for me. Can I almost like just say, can I have some positive news? Are you going to deliver that? Are you?
What we do is we use social signals to learn very quickly and build a profile about Paul, right? And then what we deliver is only what our algorithm determines is relevant to you. So, and it's broad. It's not like we'll say, oh, you know, Paul lives on whatever, you know, in I don't know, Golders Green. So we'll find him only news about his 3-block radius, or Paul lives in London.
Okay, so I'm scared now, because I did actually used to live on Golders Green.
Yeah, well, that was a good guess. But it was like the only thing I know.
That's when I first moved to London. I used to live on Golders Green, and so yeah.
Yeah, so the goal is to figure out enough about you to provide to you more relevant content, but obviously with a focus on not siloing you into only what we think you'll like. So that's really our goal and what our mission is. It's just to keep people engaged in what's going on around them.
So Sol, I have to say that it sounds like you're extremely passionate about what you're doing and your mission. And there's going to be listeners listening to you right now who want to try and emulate what you're doing. Well, perhaps you can give us a sense of how you got started with this particular startup. Have you done a few more before, or give us a little bit of history on you as a startup founder?
I grew up around printing, around books, around all that for my whole life. My dad's been a printer. My grandfather was a printer. Grew up in that world, left college, decided to start my own sort of vertical in the family business, and I actually ended up consulting for the family business as well. So started just doing what the family business had been doing, but I expanded internationally. So where my dad was mostly US-based between vendors and clients, I went and found more international vendors, started providing more services using international vendors, stuff like that. And did that for about 3 years. 3 years. And at about a year ago, I started looking at print, and I always, you know, enjoyed technology, but I didn't understand what an app was, how to build an app or what went into it. I didn't know anything about project management, about anything. A year ago, I was just a guy, you know, and I said, you know, let me see if we could somehow use technology. And I knew about, personalization. So I always believed that, and I still believe that for print, for newspapers to survive this era, the only way they could do it is if they could provide a similar experience to online, which means that I could go to a specific website and I could go to Sports Illustrated, or I could go to a specific website for my that niche vertical that I want. And in print, it's sort of, and a good analogy, the newspaper is like the supermarket of news. It's like going to Walmart or to Tesco in England, right, where you have everything. And the websites are more like the local corner store, where it's a little more focused on what you want to buy, right? So, and with that analogy, I always felt that for print to survive, it needs to personalize. And I always was running around telling people how we have to personalize print. We have to, you know, we have the technology, the presses exist to do this, and we have the software. Why are we printing everybody their own newspaper? And this has been this is something that had been banging around in my head for a while. Had some other ideas, even how to use it, like for retail, you know, for stuff like that, where you could send Paul a catalog that's only relevant to him. But started looking just at bringing tech and print together. And throughout that process, being away from my desktop and being on my mobile more, I realized even how much worse mobile news is than desktop news, and how much more fragmented it is and how much harder it is. And part of that is just because my phone is very personal, so, and that's why I want it to be relevant to me. And if I'm on my phone, I probably don't have time. You know, I think there's leisure reading. I think leisure reading may happen on the mobile, but not during the day. It's more of a of you know, and for me personally, at least, it definitely only happens a lot more on the desktop than on the, than on mobile. So that being the case, realized that I was missing a lot of stuff that was going on around me that was important to me because I couldn't stay on top of the news as well, and just you know, fell in love with the space. Well, you know, got really passionate about solving this. Started looking at what was out there. Really didn't find a good solution, and you know, we've actually started off. Originally, the idea was a pretty simple one. It was about let's find what's relevant for every user in their Twitter stream. So it was sort of like micro trends, I like to call it, and that was the original idea. But as I'm sure you know, and as I'm sure your listeners know, ideas are iterative. You don't wake up in the morning and have this great startup idea that takes over your life that you end up building, you know, for 5 to 7 to 10 years, right? What happens is you have an idea, you have a kernel, and then, you know, you plant that seed. And so from there, so we started off with this idea, micro trends, let's figure out, because Twitter is such a good source for news. And then we started just looking at news in general and said, what about the people who aren't on Twitter? What about everyone else? How could we, you know, use publicly available social data that they could give us to really create this personalized, customized content for them? And that's really what we've been working on, and what our forthcoming app will you know, hopefully do.
Yeah, so in terms of, I mean, it sounds like a wonderful journey, and I wondered how you actually got the funding to get this started. Was this from your own pocket, or did you end up getting funding from angel investors, or was it a case of having to raise money? Because I know that's one of the biggest questions I'm often asked about getting started in a startup.
Yeah, so basically my journey was pretty, you know, obviously not knowing anyone in the technology sector, still not knowing, you know, anybody, so to speak. I know some people now. I've been working really hard on building out a network and getting to know as many people as possible. So essentially what I did was I found a dev shop, a development, you know, consulting firm called KoshX Labs. They're really great, koshx.com, great group of guys. And I found them. And I paid them to build our MVP, to build this Twitter filter originally. But I worked very closely on that. It's not like I didn't give them a blank check and tell them, here, go build it, right? So they invited me to their HipChat rooms. So I was always there. I was always involved in product, always, you know, getting on the designer's case. And I sort of paid, I like to say, like, I paid, you know, whatever I spent on that original MVP to learn product management. And now I learned what it takes, you know, how to manage a product, how to get something built. And as part of that process as well, I really became very friendly, very, very close friends with one of the founders of KoshX, Ben Teitelbaum, who is now my co-founder. And we just worked closely together. And I guess whatever I said or did over the last, you know, 8 months or a year, you know, till he agreed to join us, whatever I did or said, you know, was meant enough to him that now he's agreed in principle to join us at Miner and is my co-founder. And that's really what my journey was. So I did not have any angel funding. Everything, I guess you would say, was bootstrapped. And I like to always say that there's a catch-22 of development. And what I mean by that is you never have enough of what you need. So even if you go out and raise some money, it's not enough because you won't be able to, you have enough money, it's 18 months, it runs out. It's not forever, right? And you have to grow and you have to do more than what your resources allow at any given time. So whether that means you don't have enough developers because you can't find them, because we know that the people, the talent is really the real commodity here, not so much commodity, but the real thing of value, the real thing that's hard to find. So whether it's not enough developers, not enough money, or not enough users, customers, there's always something that you want to have more of, and you have to just use less to get more. And that's really your job and what the really great founders figure out.
Yeah, I love that. You have to use less to get more. And I think we can learn a lot from that. Now, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this who don't know how to code apps, but want to get into, you know, an app type of startup. Do you need to know an element of coding, or do you need to have like a co-founder who knows it, or can you run and just in outsource or employ those resources to code the apps?
So really, it depends, I think, on your app. So if your app is You know, for example, a good example is Pinterest. I don't think Pinterest had any technical talent on their team for like a long time. The real first couple of years, and they raised a ton of money and et cetera before they brought any of their dev in-house. Because Pinterest is not really a technical challenge. Pinterest is a design challenge, right? So it was more about the design, and it was more about that, right? So some, depending on what you're building, it becomes more or less important to have design, to have tech in-house. So if you're building artificial intelligence, if you're building, another example would be ad tech, right? Ad tech is very technical. You really have to know your stuff. You have to be able to deploy these massive clusters, that are simultaneously bidding on millions of instances to really hit scale, to reach scale. But that's something that you can't hire a junior coder 3 years after you started building something and raise, $1 million or whatever, a year, doesn't matter what your timeline is, and then get them up to speed, or even a senior coder, right? This is something that they have to really know very well, and it's something that you have to grow into. You have to journey experience to be able to get to that level, right? So, for example, depending on what you're doing, it becomes more or less important to have the tech in-house.
This episode is sponsored by GummyCube. GummyCube have just appeared in VentureBeat, and it's really an exciting article that's been shared several hundred times on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. What they're talking about is their App Store optimization service, but more importantly, talking about DataCube, which is giving developers a lot more App Store intelligence. Now, the founder behind this, Dave Bell, he is a veteran mobile entrepreneur. He knows exactly what to provide to app developers. They've just raised $830,000 in seed money, so they're able to pump a lot of this money into making this service awesome. And it really is a case of tapping into the insights that DataCube is providing, which makes their App Store optimization very unique and highly sought after. And so you may want to get in there early before this hits big time. As I say, this VentureBeat article has been shared quite rapidly. You'll see some screenshots as well of DataCube on the back end. So I have to say thank you very much to GummyCube. They are terrifically supporting this show. Go and check them out. Go and have a look at this VentureBeat article. And thanks very much for supporting the show. Let me tell you about the apppreneursummit.com, where I'll be speaking on the 9th of April through to the 18th of April. It's a live online event, and you'll be able to learn about the foundations of building a profitable app business. And then you'll be able to launch your app the right way. As we know from listening to the guests on this show, there's a right way and a wrong way to launch your apps. You'll be able to leverage your small or even non-existent marketing budget to get the best from your apps. You'll learn the most current and effective app store optimization techniques, and you'll be able to capitalize on your social media strategies as well to bring you even more organic downloads. A lot of these speakers are good friends of mine, and I can highly vouch for this Apppreneur Summit. So what you need to do to get free access, you'll get access to the summit, and the content lasts for 3 days for free. Just go to www.apppreneursummit.com, click the big orange button that says get free access, and then you'll be all registered. It's highly relevant to you, given that you're listening to this podcast. So thank you very much to apppreneursummit.com for sponsoring this show. So let's see if this sounds familiar. You've done all the work that it takes to create the best possible iOS 8 Apple app, and you've got it on the App Store, and you've done all the ASO, and you've got users to go and look at your app as it appears on the App Store. Well, you still need to convince these people to download your app and turn them from just simply people that are browsing to real downloads. And the way you do this is that you create a professional preview video for the Apple App Store. Now, our sponsor is creating these. You can do it yourself. He's offering a guideline, a 28-page guide on how to do it yourself. But this is risky because the whole app can get rejected by Apple if you don't meet their strong guidelines, and they have a lot of parameters. So the alternative is to actually just simply pay for a professionally produced preview video. So I recommend going to www.appvideomachine.com. That's www.appvideomachine.com. Go and take a look at their prices. They start as low as $79 for a simple video and $147 for the Ninja video. So that's www.appvideomachine.com, and thank you very much for supporting this show. Yeah, now there's two things we need to do before we say goodbye, Sol. One is that we love to come up with new ideas, and speaking with someone that's as passionate as you, I know that you've got several ideas that you probably haven't got time to work on, and I wondered if we could try to flesh out an idea with you, something you know, that we could either build as a web app or a native app. And I wondered if you can share that with us. Do you have an app idea?
Yeah, you know, I think something I've thought about off and on for a while, and this is more of an enterprise play. It's a little different, but sort of not every time, not everyone needs a data science level of analytics for them to make their business better. But for example, if I have Google Analytics on my website, so if I know what that means, I could then take that and I could logically imply certain things or not. Or I could hire someone, and I'm talking about even if you go to the next level, mixed panel, et cetera, that's all well and good. But when it comes to brick and mortars in particular, I think that analytics, and I'm not talking about where McDonald's knows exactly how many people go into a specific location every day and how many burgers, how many pounds of meat they have to have there at any given time to be able to serve whatever the demand will be. What I'm talking about is, you know, you have your local diner down the block, Joe's Diner, who does whatever, $1 million a year, let's say. You know, he has a nice business, does well, but, you know, doesn't have the resources of a huge, you know, conglomerate or chain or et cetera. And he wants to deal with spoilage, right? And all these type of things that come up, for example, in the restaurant business, but the same is true for clothing, et cetera. I call it sausage maker analytics, where you could, depending on, you could put in whatever data you could glean, you could figure out whether it's POS data, whether it's data you know on top of that, but then just, you know, move away from your gut. So you know Tuesdays are busier, but you forget that Tuesday's a holiday, and just avoid mistakes that end up costing the small business and can really ruin the small business's week, month, or year. And I think that same can be said for clothing, you know, where if it's you know how many pairs of jeans to buy for a season, or you know what colors or whatever. And I think that some of that, using big data and open data and combining that into what you can learn from the business itself, and sort of having something that a non-technical person, non-data science person, because you can't afford to pay someone $80K to pay SAP $5K a month, you know, for their analytics package, or IBM, whoever. So sort of a SaaS analytics for small business that, you know, could give you some actionable insight based on some limited information, I think would be really cool.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea as well. I mean, what you're talking there is big data for smaller businesses, so that they can actually use some of this data to manage their inventory and just reduce spoilers. And I think that's you're really onto something there. So I've seen a few versions of apps do that, especially in the bars and restaurants, they you can actually stock inventory with just using your iPhone and taking images of the bottles of alcohol and looking at where they are and the levels and stuff like that. And it's really interesting. So yeah, anyone in listening to that idea, you're onto something, and I think you should go and build it. So there's one final thing, which is we are an app-related show. We'd love to know if you have an app or two that you use to get through the day on your smartphone, perhaps one you could recommend to us.
Yeah, so Slack is huge for us, you know, just because we're a distributed team. So my co-founder's in Virginia. Some of our developers are in Virginia. We have a designer's actually from Serbia. So Slack is a lifesaver. HipChat as well, same idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, so which one? You're actually using Slack, but you mentioned HipChat earlier, and are you using both?
Yeah, so we used HipChat for a while, and I actually like some elements of HipChat better. So HipChat saves all your links, so it's really easy to find links. We're in Slack, like as a list. You have a list view of all your links, all your files. So Slack, I believe, only saves files like in that list view. So having that view of links, I think, is super useful. But they're both great. Right now we're using Slack primarily, which is awesome. Love Slack. And then I also use Sunrise Calendar, which is just really beautiful, really fun, you know, syncs up with everything.
I actually use that one. I'm really worried because they were just taken over by Microsoft. So
yeah, everyone's worried about that. I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out, even though it's not really an app so much, but I work at a WeWork, which really just makes it for co-working. And WeWork, they have such beautiful spaces. And they really, the community is great, and I just love WeWork, which you know, means I don't have to worry about phone bills and electric bills and coffee and whatever, and I could just, you know, add on, remove as comes up, and it's just, that's another really awesome thing that really, I think, makes it so much easier, especially at an early stage, where right now it's just me and my co-founder and then some contractors, so, you know, as you branch out, and you could have up to, like, you know, you can start doing the math, but especially in a place like New York City where space is such a premium, you could probably have even 20, 30 people at a WeWork and it still would pay. And it's just great to be here and to love to work, to go to where you work. So you have to love what you do, but it's also good to love to where you go to do it.
Yeah. I'll put links to that on the episode show notes. So people just need to go to theappguy.co and search out the episode with yourself, Sol, 250, and you'll be able to get links to all the things we're mentioning as well. And I love the idea of WeWork. I'll definitely make a note of that and put it on there because when I started running a business, when I first left my finance job, I ended up spending more time worrying about the office and the plants and the coffee and paying the rent and paying the phone bills. And you kind of forget that you're actually not there to do all that stuff. So any company that takes all that headache away from you is definitely a worthwhile investment.
Yeah. I'm huge fan.
Yeah. So how do we reach out and connect with you, Sol? Because you're so inspirational. I'm sure people would love to know how to get in touch.
Well, you can email me anytime at sol@minor.me. That's sol@minor.me. I do respond to my emails, even though I don't think I'm ever going to get back to inbox zero. I think those are, you know, days of the past, but no, I do get back to everybody. I really like just giving back to the community. So, you know, my journey this past year has been very transformational for me, you know, going from industry that has very little tech, which is why I started looking at ways, but just learning all about tech and getting to know it. That's been a great journey. So if anybody's thinking of making the leap, you know, feel free to reach out. As far as if you asked about needing to know how to code, you know, there's a funny Startup L. Jackson has a blog, which I'm not even going to mention the name because then we'll get in trouble. But essentially, if you Google Startup L. Jackson blog, he has a post on there about how as a founder, just realize that the hardest thing is to get people to use what you build. So focus on getting people to use what you build, and don't bother going out and learning how to code unless it's something you think you'll really love. So if you love solving puzzles, sure, go learn how to code. Maybe you'll be really good at it, and maybe that'll be the best use of your resources. But remember, you have limited resources, and you just a way to use your resources to the max is to stick to what you know, to what you're good at, essentially. So if you're good at selling, you know, figure out what it is, build an enterprise app and go sell it. You know, go grind it out. If you're good at ideas and, you know, and whatever it is you're good at, just try to use your strengths and then find someone to complement you who has what you're weak at. So for me, it's tech, right? I can't code, so I had to find someone who could do that. But, another thing you have to realize as well is you have to be as good as they are. So you're going to want a superstar to be your co-founder, to be your partner, so to speak, right? So remember, you have to be a superstar as well. right? So you're not going to, as good as you are, that's as good as the person who will partner with you. So you just have to remember that going forward. So just make sure you're doing everything you can day and night to move the needle, to be the superstar, because you always want, you know, you want your partners to be superstars as well.
So you've just picked up on one of the big themes there, which is the importance of a co-founder and the team around you. So it's great that you mentioned that. Well, Sol, this has been so exciting talking to you, and just so passionate, loads of energy. And I know that everyone listening to this is going to be really energized. You know, we have had people who have left their corporate jobs because of the guests that they listen to. So I'm no doubt that you may be getting a few phone calls or emails from people leaving their jobs and trying to pursue startups. So thank you very much for joining us on the App Guy podcast, and all the best with that wonderful journey that you're taking with your startup.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. And if anybody, again, feel free to reach out to me. I'm always here to help out and give back as much as I can.
This episode was brought to you by Gummy Cube. Just go to gummicube.com and go check out their App Store optimization service. And if you're using web data to optimize your app, you're doing it wrong. You need to be looking at mobile data. They have a full analytics package where you can get mobile data. It's very different from app data. People do different stuff on search compared to mobile apps. And so go to gummicube.com, check them out. Thanks very much for supporting the show. Just to remind you that this episode was sponsored by apppreneursummit.com, and here's why you should attend. It's an online conference that's happening on the 9th of April through to the 18th of April. And you can discover the best ways to get your app discovered and downloaded, and you can accelerate your learning and achieve your goals faster, and you can take your app to the next level for free for a limited time. So I would highly recommend doing it right now if you haven't already. Go to www.apppreneursummit.com and go and register for free. Thank you very much to Apppreneur Summit for sponsoring the show. Remember to go to appvideomachine.com to get your professionally produced app preview video for Apple. And you can get a 28-page guideline if you want to try it yourself, but I would recommend just paying these low prices and getting an expert to do it. They do offer an Apple-approved guarantee, which means that your app is unlikely to get rejected because they guarantee it. And you're not going to be risking the rejection of Apple for doing your own video. So go to www.appvideomachine.com, and thanks very much to App Video Machine for sponsoring this show.